السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. So yesterday we had read up to the point where amnesty was announced. So after the announcement of amnesty, it was made known to the public that this was only for those whose crimes were regarded as minor in the eyes of the government. Hardcore criminals were excluded and could be apprehended at any time. Hazrat Maulana Qasim Nanoti Rahmatullah Ali was amongst those who were at the top of their list. They were still searching for him everywhere, in Nanota, Dioban, and in other villages as well. Hazrat Rahmatullah Ali kept on moving from place to place to avoid arrest. Eventually, he decided to leave India with the intention of performing Hajj. In this way, he would be safe from the British. He would get an opportunity to perform Hajj, and he would also get an opportunity to spend some time with his Murshid, with his Sheikh, Hazrat Haji Imdadullah Sahib, Rahmatullah Ali. But Maulana Qasim Sahib had no funds for Hajj. But Allah Ta'ala made all the arrangements for him from the unseen, until he eventually left home for this Mubarak journey. And this you find up to today. So many people, they got no funds whatsoever to go for Hajj, no even intention to go for Hajj. But Allah Ta'ala makes the means and they go. There's so many people, although with all these regulations and you have to apply and this, that, they didn't even apply to. And last minute something happens, whatever, and they are gone for Hajj. So Allah Ta'ala takes whom He wants there, He will take them there. So although all this preparation was done very secretly, Maulana Yaqub Nanoti Rahmatullah Ali, who was Hazrat's childhood friend, became aware of Hazrat's plans. He was hopeful that somehow he could also join Maulana Qasim Sahib on this Mubarak journey to Haramain Sharifain. He did not have much funds and he took whatever he could gather to join up with Hazrat Maulana. This journey commenced in Jamadul Ukhra or Jamadul Thani, 1277 Hijri, corresponding with December 1860. They travelled very secretly and had to be extremely careful. Instead of travelling by road to Karachi, they felt it safer to go by boat from Punjab to Sindh, and again from Sindh to Karachi by boat. From Karachi, they took a sailboat to Jeddah and reached Makkah Mukarramah in 6 months. Our situation is, if we are delayed in Hajj terminal by 1 day or 6 hours or 12 hours, we are getting so upset. Imagine a journey for Hajj taking 6 months to get there. It is not known when exactly Hazrat Maulana Qasim Sahib Rahmatullah Ali completed his hibs. Whilst on the ship to Makkah Mukarramah, the moon for Ramadan Sharif was sighted. Upon sighting the moon, Hazrat Maulana Qasim Sahib announced that Taraweeh will be performed on the ship and complete Quran Sharif. Not Alam Tara Taraweeh, complete Quran Sharif will be performed. It was only then that it became known that Hazrat Maulana Qasim Sahib was a Hafiz. He recited the entire Quran Sharif on the ship in Taraweeh. It seems that he became a Hafiz during the days that he was in hiding, because all his other work came to a standstill. He couldn't teach, he couldn't do anything. So instead of wasting the time, while he was in hiding all that time, that's the time he did his hibs. Hazrat Rahmatullah Ali dedicated all his time in those days towards memorizing the Quran Sharif. However, he never had an opportunity prior to this to recite the Quran Sharif in Taraweeh. It was on this Mubarak journey that Hazrat Rahmatullah Ali took the opportunity of reciting the entire Quran Sharif in Taraweeh Salah. Hazrat was extremely delighted when he completed the khatam of the Quran Sharif. When the vessel stopped at written here, Makla. I don't know if it's the right. But they say when the vessel stopped at Makla, Hazrat Maulana purchased halwa. Halwa e Maskat. It's a special type of halwa. They're saying here, I don't know what it is. They write me, special sweetmeat. And he distributed it amongst all those present, just as a hafiz does on the completion of the Quran Sharif. So where was the big jalsa? Today, one person completing his big jalsas taking place. Our Hazrat Mohammed Patel Sahib Rahmatullahi was not in favor of it. I'm not saying it's wrong. Every person got their own view and whatever. But our Hazrat Rahmatullah Ali was not in favor. He used to say the child completes his one program in the masjid, something, let the child also make his khatam and carry on. Make like a big story out of it. So when you go a little bit into the history of these jalsas, you find that in the old days, in order to establish the madaris, they used to have these jalsas to create that encouragement in the community, because nobody was interested in studying deen. Talking about in India, those days. So they started having these jalsas to encourage people, and also so that the community can come to know that there is a madrasa here. And if they wish to be part of the sawab of the madrasa, then they can contribute towards the madrasa, etc. But even those ulama who have, you know, used to have these big jalsas, you know, so many of them now, I think even Mufti Taqi Sahib, he also mentioned recently in one of the jalsas that we're going overboard, these jalsas, etc. I need to tone down. And one is the jalsa itself, students are completing, some bayan is given, some dua is made. But the big story becomes the feeding. That becomes like a big affair now. And then each child, even if it is in a darul room, then they go home, and then now there's another whole feast over there. The other thing is, nowadays, the girls also, they are getting a lot of shock, you know, to do hibs and Alhamdulillah, it's good. You want to become hafiza, no problem. But then why must they have big jalsas? A girl is supposed to be mastur, hidden. Now, ladies too, some of them are getting shocked, and they too want to have a big jalsa too. When you say the small girls, alright, never mind, for encouragement or something. But the big ladies? Now all of a sudden there's like a whole tide now. Ladies want to do qiraat. They too want to read qiraat. And they want to have qiraat competitions and all that. Our Salaf never did this. Our pious predecessors, they didn't do things like this. Yes, ladies did become hafiza. Ladies, some of them even learned qiraat also. But it was all done quietly in the home. When they completed, what they did, nobody knew anything. Now one person completing, big jalsas taking place. Now also from one town, some people, they keep some contact. So now the family is teaching him. So they said, now the first student completed, they started a Hibs class, and the first student completed, they say, no, we want you to come for the jalsa. They gave me some dates, this date or that date. I must choose the date to come for the jalsa. We'll have the men at a certain venue and ladies at a certain venue and feeding at a certain venue for the men and certain men. So I said, what for? What do we need to do all this for? If you, the child is completing, it's a girl. You don't want everybody to know her name and everybody to know about her and all of that. So when in that same Hibs class, let her complete. If you want to invite somebody for Barkat's sake, that person makes a dua or something, get one pious person, invite the person, can give them some nasihat and make one dua and khalas, finish. That's why you need to do all this big story for what? But as I said, I'm not saying that what, if San Marisa is having jalsa and all that, I'm not saying it's wrong. If they're feeding and all that, obviously they know better. But I'm just telling you, our Hazrat Mohammed Patasa Rahmatullah Ali, he wasn't in favor of this. And I see our Hazrat Mohammed Magda Sahib also, small, quiet, carries on. Students finish, they just go there by Masjid Hilal or somewhere, have one small khatam, and it's over. No big story. And I liked also Maulana Naeem Sahib. He had the Bukhari khatam, you know, between the two namazes. Bukhari khatam took place. Khalas, only Mufti Mutara Sahib, he did the khatam and he made finish. Jalsa was over. After that, there was some eating and all that. People want to do all that. But Maulana, the Jalsa itself was simple, you know. Straightforward, simple. Ji. According to a narration in Hikayat-e-Awliya, it is mentioned that Hazrat Maulana had memorized one para a day when he was on the ship, and he would recite this para in Taraweeh Salah at night. He would sit all alone where no one would even realize that he was memorizing the Quran Sharif. So this was indeed a karamat. So whether it was that in his days of hiding he learned the Quran Sharif, whether it was on the ship he learned the Quran Sharif, but he did become a Hafiz of Quran. Throughout the journey, Hazrat Maulana was extremely happy and relaxed. He would sit and speak to his friends and colleagues with much cheer, and there could be multiple reasons for this happiness. Why was he so cheerful on this particular journey? So one reason was his enthusiasm to visit Haramain Sharifain. Right? This was the first journey of his to Haramain Sharifain in his life, first time he's going. So obviously there is that excitement, that happiness. The second reason is enthusiasm to meet his Sheikh, Hazrat Haji Imdadullah Sahib Rahmatullah Ali. He hadn't seen him now for such a long time. He's going to meet his Sheikh. And the third thing is, India had become a jail for him. For the last 3 years, he lived in hiding, moving from here to there. The moment the ship left the Karachi harbour, Maulana was freed from the shackles of India. The six-month journey was actually extremely relaxing for Hazrat Maulana after the long period of hiding in India. Although travelling by ship those days was no easy thing, but compared to what was happening in India, this was much better for him. They reached Makkah Mukarramah in Dhul Qa'dah and were blessed with the opportunity of performing Hajj and Ziyarat. After completing the necessary rituals of Hajj and Ziyarat, Hazrat Rahmatullah Ali returned to India by ship. The passengers disembarked in Bombay and travelled by train to Nasik. From here they had to make other arrangements for transport, and eventually they reached Nanota in Jamadul Ukhra, 1278 Hijri, December 1861, 1 year later. The journey of Hajj. And not too long ago, many of our people that went for Hajj, they used to go from before Ramadan Sharif and come back after Hajj. That used to be the norm. Now they don't allow you to stay that long and all that. But now imagine in their zamana, 6 months was only traveling. And he performed Hajj after that. They don't give the duration of the return journey. with it. Going, because he had to hide, go this way, that way, 6 months took him just to reach Makkah Mukarramah. The journey took exactly 1 year. When they reached home, they were told that there was now no fear in India. The government has announced peace and amnesty had been granted to everyone. In December 1861, Hazrat Rahmatullah Ali returned to his hometown, Nanota. Prior to this, because of the war, he could not spend much time at home. Hazrat was quite happy to be back at home with his family and associates. And some ulama had requested him to start teaching Bukhari Sharif, which he readily accepted. Daily lessons on hadith continued in Nanota for an entire year. Hazrat Rahmatullah Ali taught Sahih Bukhari with great passion and enthusiasm. Hazrat Maulana Yaqub Nanoti Sahib Rahmatullah Ali also sat for that entire year in Hazrat's Bukhari Sharif lessons. Hazrat's parents were applying pressure on him to go out and earn a risk. He must earn something. Parents, that's difficult. Child must earn something. Thus, he sought employment in a printing press, which was located in Delhi. This printing press was owned by Maulana Wajihuddin Saharanpuri Rahmatullah Ali, who was the ustad of Maulana Ahmad Ali Saharanpuri Rahmatullah Ali. Most probably, this printing press was named after the great Mujahid Sayyid Ahmad Shaheed Sahib Rahmatullah Ali. And this was the best printing press in Delhi in those days. This was the best printing press. In those days, pupils had to write these books down by copying them from other kitabs. In this way, they learned and studied the hadith of Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. Everything they had to write. There were no kitabs, like they can just purchase the kitab, or the madrasa loans them a kitab. They had to write everything down. It was the vision of these great ulama to print the books of hadith, especially Bukhari Sharif and Tirmizi Sharif, with the hashiyas, with the footnotes, to make it easier for the students studying hadith. So this was the whole objective of them opening these printing press. This was indeed a great service to the deen, since at that time there were very few books available in India for students of hadith. These editions are still being printed in India and Pakistan, and students all over the world are still using them. The bulk of the footnotes of Bukhari Sharif were written by Maulana Ahmad Ali Muhaddith Saharanpuri, whilst those of the last few paras were compiled by Hazrat Maulana Qasim Nanoti Sahib Rahmatullah Ali. No one can easily make out the difference between the two authors. Only if one reads through the entire footnotes thoroughly would one be able to make out some difference. You can make out one person from the next, but it's so close, very hard to make it out. Some people objected to Maulana Ahmad Ali Sahib, saying, "What have you done? You've come almost to the end of the kitab and now you handed it to some young anim," because he gave it to Maulana Qasim Sahib to do. Maulana Ahmad Ali replied, "I am not such a simpleton that I'll do something without first thinking and pondering." He then showed them the footnotes that Maulana Qasim Sahib had written. When they saw the manner in which they were compiled and how strongly Hazrat Maulana supported the Hanafi Mazhab in his writings, they realized their error. Maulana Ahmad Ali Sahib then relocated from Delhi to Saharanpur and opened up another printing press in Meerut. Hazrat Maulana Qasim Sahib also moved to Meerut to help his ustad with the proofreading of the kitabs before sending them in for printing. It was in these days that Hazrat Rahmatullah Ali worked on the translation of the Quran Sharif prepared by Shah Abdul Qadir Dehlavi Rahmatullah Ali. Hazrat Maulana was responsible for placing the translation of each ayat under the Arabic to make it easier for the reader to understand the meaning of the Quran Sharif. This was completed in the year 1286, 3 years after establishing Darul Uloom Deoband. We should not even for a moment think that Hazrat was a proofreader like how we have proofreaders today in many printing companies. The work that he was involved in demanded a very high level of ilm and aqal. Every book that was printed had to be checked properly from cover to cover. All mistakes had to be highlighted. Each kitab had to be compared to the original manuscript. Each manuscript had to be compared to other manuscripts. The hashiyas, the footnotes, had to be included to make it easier for the students studying the kitab. Explanations and answers had to be written wherever doubts could occur to the reader. This obviously was not merely proofreading, but rather a great ilmi service to the future ulama of the world, who are sitting here, all these students of deen, studying the deen of Allah Ta'ala, and those asatiza that are teaching. So what a khidmat this was. And if we don't read these things, how will we appreciate their efforts? Allah Ta'ala accepted Hazrat Maulana for this great work of deen long before he laid the foundations of Darul Uloom Deoband. Many other printing presses, after seeing Hazrat's works, called him over to work for them. He worked for the following companies, all got the names here, Mujtaba'i, Hashimi, Muntafa'i, all different names. It was during this period that Hazrat's mind began working towards establishing an institute for Islamic studies in India. Hazrat Shaykhul Hadith Maulana Muhammad Zakariya Sahib Rahmatullah Ali mentions the following incident about Hazrat Maulana Qasim Sahib. Maulana Qasim Nanoti Rahmatullah Ali used to work in a printing press for a person by the name of Munshi Mumtaz Ali. He used to assist him in the proofreading and correcting of the manuscripts. It appears that Munshi Saab, as the owner of the press, had no strict regulations and conditions under which Hazrat had to work. In fact, he had so much of love and respect for Hazrat Maulana Qasim Saab that he considered it sufficient honor just to be blessed with his presence and company. Whether what work he does, that's secondary matter. Just to be in his company, that much is sufficient. Hazrat Maulana Qasim Saab Rahmatullah Ali was a man with such a sense of responsibility and duty that he considered his work in the printing press of great importance. It may not be recorded in his biography, but in the circles of Ulama-i Deoband, it is well known that if ever he had been late for work, he made note of the time. At the end of the month, he used to work out these minutes, add it together into hours, and insisted that his salary be adjusted so as to exclude payment for the hours that he had not worked. Such was his taqwa and piety. Whilst working for the printing company in Meerut, Hazrat Rahmatullah Ali would also conduct lessons of hadith in his spare time. For some time, this program was discontinued. When Hazrat's hours were more relaxed, he resumed teaching and a large number of ulama came to study hadith by him. Hazrat Rahmatullah Ali specialized in teaching the Siha Sitta, the six authentic books of hadith. Many ulama who gained much popularity in the field of ilm studied hadith under Hazrat Maulana. Maulana Yaqub Sahib Rahmatullah Ali studied Muslim Sharif under Hazrat Maulana Qasim Sahib when he was living in Meerut, and he was also employed to work in the same press. Later he became the head teacher in Darul Uloom Deoband and the ustad of many great ulama. Where exactly this class was held in Meerut is not known. However, this much is known, that a large group of students would gather daily for Hazrat Maulana's lessons. His manner of teaching hadith resembled the style and the manner of his ustad, Shah Abdul Ghani Mujaddidi Rahmatullah Alayhi and Shah Muhammad Ishaq Dehlavi Rahmatullah Alayhi. With each hadith, he would explain the meaning, the reliability of the hadith, the difference, the masail that are derived from the hadith, and also the differences between the Hanafi and the Shafi'i mazahib, as well as the other imams. Thereafter, he would explain the madhab of Imam Abu Hanifa rahmatullahi alayhi with proofs, giving the necessary replies to the other mazahib. His lessons were so dynamic that the students sitting in his class were left fascinated with his dars. Nowadays, that level of Qurbani is not there. I remember Hazrat Mu'iz Fathi Asab Rahmatullah Alayhi used to tell us that their Shaykh al-Hadith used to come after Isha, and at that time he had to be brought, his health and all that was not too good. So they used to take him and they used to place him on the cushion where the Ustad teaches. And then he would teach. From after Isha he would teach and he would complete at midnight. That's besides the dars during the day, the class time, whatever. He would start after Isha teaching and complete at midnight. When it was midnight, he shouldn't look at the clock. Midnight, he'll complete and close it down. Every night they see it's midnight. Then they used to take him back home. Now, what is being explained here, and how Maulana Qasim Sahib was teaching, every hadith explanation, all the mazahib, the differences, then giving the Hanafi mazhab, answering all the other mazahib with the dalail, etc. How long it will take? So how many hours have to be given? Today's time, students of deen don't even want to leave home. Not even want to leave home. You know, we find that the other room is right near our house, half day, we go listen, be happy. I'm not saying you can't become an alim like that, but that mustn't be the reason you go. If you're choosing that Darul Uloom, you are choosing that Darul Uloom because you feel that you will be able to benefit from those asatiza. You'll be able to learn properly. And then if Allah Ta'ala has made it easy, that now you are at home, you got the comforts of home. So now what am I doing with the balance of my time? Allah has made it asan for me, so now I'm supposed to be exerting myself with the other time that I have on my hand. But in 90% of the cases, it's not happening. And some situations, it's sad that the person now is coming from a home where there's not a very strong dini background. One is a person is coming from a home where there's a strong dini background, he may be in a better environment than being out, right? But sometimes the person is not coming from that kind of a home. Now he goes home, World Cup is on. Now he's sitting and watching the World Cup too. Cricket too, he's sitting and watching. Then he knows that girl from high school, now he's meeting her also. And then he knows those friends, now he's going out with them too. Because he's not in a mahol. So now how that person, what is he going? So it's left to the individual. It's left to the individual. Many, many became such great ulama. Even in India, there were no institutes. But they became such ulama. It's left to the individual. A person can go to a madrasa, this half day, dars, whatever. But how he spends his time after that, that is very important. His taqwa, his wara, staying away from guna, making that extra mutala'ah, etc. There's one young alim, alhamdulillah, Allah Ta'ala has blessed him. His bayans also are very well received, and he's got rusukh in ilm, etc. So I knew his brother well, you know, his elder brother. So sometime when I used to visit his brother at home, and this alim, who was a student at the time, and if he was at home, so he used to tell me, you know, Bai is here, if you want to meet him, he used to go to his room. It's a double-story house, downstairs, his room was downstairs. Go to his room. Never a time I went to his room, he wasn't with the kitab. And his his room only kitabs. From student days, so much kitabs he was buying, and reading the kitabs. Now after he has completed his alim course, but you see the fruits of it. See the khidmat he is making, his teaching, bayanat he is giving, whatever. You see the fruits of it. So it's very important. Hazrat Sheikh ul Hind Rahmatullah Ali is amongst the leading students of Hazrat Maulana Qasim Nanoti Rahmatullah Ali. Our sanad of hadith goes through Hazrat Sheikh ul Hind Rahmatullah Ali and then via Hazrat Maulana Qasim Nanoti Rahmatullah Ali until it reaches up to Shah Waliullah Muhaddis Dehlawi Rahmatullah Ali. Hazrat Sheikh ul Hind Rahmatullah Ali mentions, I used to make mutala'a, study the books of Shah Waliullah Dehlawi Rahmatullah Ali before attending the lessons of Hazrat Maulana Qasim Nanoti Rahmatullah Ali. I would then present the objections which I found in the books of Shah Waliullah, which were extremely difficult and complicated. On several occasions I noticed that the answers that Shah Waliullah Sahib Rahmatullah Ali had concluded his discussion with is where Maulana Qasim started his discussion. Now sometime Asatiza, tomorrow inshallah you will be Asatiza to Allah Ta'ala accept you to teach his deen. But sometime Asatiza, because of their own, what you call, insecurity, they don't like it when students question. A student asks a question, now they want to make the student look silly. They're not answering the question, but they make the student look sick. Why? Because they're frightened to answer. Because they themselves making a sarsari mutala. But you don't judge any asad. I'm telling you for you. You become ustad. For so many are here, all young students, ulama. So you're going to be studying. You're going to be teaching, inshallah, tomorrow. So you must make your mutala properly. I know our one Ustad, Hazrat Maulana Musa Patel Sahib, Allah give them jazai khair. So at one stage, I was living across the road from Maulana Musa Sahib. I was married, I was living, and Maulana Musa was living across. And Maulana Musa Sahib used to make his mutala in one room. He had one small room in his house, used to make his mutala there. Now I could see the light of that room. From my house, I could see the light. Those days, didn't have all big, big walls around the houses. And although Maulana was teaching that kitab for so many years, those kitabs, he was teaching, because Maulana Ghulamid Sahib's system, the Ustaz taught the same kitab so many years, then slowly they taught another kitab. But for so many years, Maulana Musa Sahib was teaching those kitabs. But every night, he's making mutala. Half past 11, quarter to 12, he's making mutala. When that light goes off, then you know Maulana now is retiring. Either he's going to make some other ibadat or he's retiring to bed. But until that light is on, he's making mutala. So when they came to teach also, they taught with confidence. If only we studied properly. Ji. Maulana Rahimullah Bijnori Rahmatullah Ali mentions that once when Hazrat was teaching Bukhari Sharif in Nanota, I joined his lessons. One day it happened that I joined the lesson in a condition that I didn't have wudu. As I sat down, I lifted my gaze towards Hazrat Rahmatullah Ali and he indicated to me that I should not sit. Later on, he called me and said, Mia, it's inappropriate for a student to sit down in the lessons of Bukhari Sharif without wudu. Now what kashf Allah Ta'ala had gifted them with? This firasat, you know, firasat of a mu'min. Allah had blessed them. Hazrat would teach many other kitabs as well. Hazrat Maulana Yaqub Sahib Rahmatullah Ali says that he studied Masnavi Sharif of Maulana Rumi Rahmatullah Ali under Maulana Qasim Sahib Rahmatullah Ali in Meerut. Hazrat Shaykhul Hind Rahmatullah Ali says that he studied Abi Hayat under Maulana Qasim Sahib in this manner. Maulana Qasim Sahib had taught many other kitabs according to the need. Wherever Hazrat was, he always kept the lessons of Hadith alive. Whether in Nanota, Dioban, Meerut, or any other place, his lessons attracted students from all over. See, this is a very important lesson. Very important lesson. Lot of times we have ambitions, dini ambitions, right? But we're waiting for that big thing to happen. We've got ambition now. You want to write a commentary on Bukhari Sharif. You're waiting for that to happen now. What a person has to do is start doing whatever Allah Ta'ala is allowing him to do now. Start doing that. So then what will happen? The person is showing Allah Ta'ala, وَالَّذِينَ جَاهَدُوا فِينَا لَنَهْدِيَنَّهُمْ سُبُلَنَا. The person is showing Allah Ta'ala, Allah will open the road for him. Allah will allow him to serve his deen. If we take Hazrat Maulana Ismail Sahib Rahmatullah Ali, how much of Qurbani in the khidmat of deen in the first few years? So much of Qurbani. Today's time, we want to know what's the package. We want to see the house. What kind of house? Hazrat's time, when he went to make imamat in one of the towns here in the Midlands area, so the house was made of roof sheeting and wood, like what you call a shack. And it's cold there. The pay also was very little, small town, very little. Maulana never had a motor car. When he needed to come Stanger to visit the family, to hitchhike. Those days you could hitchhike. So he used to hitchhike, carrying the baby with Apagori. Now we, from the word go, no, everything must be sorted out for us. Then we accept this khidmat and that khidmat. Now first they worked like that. Then Allah Ta'ala opened the road. Allah says, you know, this banda of mine, he wants to serve my deen. Then Allah Ta'ala opens the road. Person, you have to make the mujahada, you know, have to sacrifice. Now Maulana Qasim Sahib, if we're reading his life here, wherever he went, whether he's working a printing press, whether he's at home, he's teaching hadith. He didn't wait now, no, one institute must get built and I can teach hadith. He is teaching hadith Sharif. Now Allah Pak, see this banda of mine, how much passion he got for hadith Sharif. Now Allah chose him for what a thing? Darul Uloom Deoband. For the fountain. So they got a list here. They say there's hundreds of his students, right? I don't know. I would love to read these names out to you. So Hazrat Shaykhul Hind Rahmatullah Ali was the first student of Darul Uloom Deoband. He studied many of his kitabs under Maulana Qasim Sahib, including the Siha Sitta. He eventually became the head teacher in Deoband. And he was also given the title of Shaykhul Hind. And some say that title didn't do justice to him. He is Shaykhul Alam. He also headed the movement of the Reshmi Rumal. I don't know if you are familiar with that movement, the silken cloth. And he was imprisoned in Malta for a few years. He was born in Bareilly. His father, Maulana Zulfikar Ali Sahab Rahmatullah Ali, was also a great alim and a colleague of Maulana Qasim Sahab Nanoti Rahmatullah Ali. Sheikh ul Hind Rahmatullah Ali translated the Quran Sharif into Urdu, which is widely accepted throughout the world. Some of his famous students were Maulana Ashraf Ali Sahab Thanvi Rahmatullah Ali, Maulana Hussain Ahmad Madni Rahmatullah Ali, Allama Anwar Shah Kashmiri Rahmatullah Ali, Maulana Muhammad Ilyas Khandelvi Rahmatullah Ali, Mufti Kifayatullah Rahmatullah Ali, Maulana Fakhruddin Ahmad Muradabadi Rahmatullah Ali, Allama Ibrahim Balyawi Rahmatullah Ali. Now, you see, those of you that are familiar, you will understand why Deoband is a fountain now. Right? By reading these names, you will understand what is the connection with Deoband. I said to you yesterday that every work of deen that we have, right, the fountain was Deoband, whether it's Tabligh, whether it's Talim Ta'allum, whether it's Tasawwuf. The fountain was Deoband. And what we forget is, whether it's Jihad. All this, for us, came from there. Now they have, they're giving some brief, I'm not going into that, I want to get to Darul Uloom Deoband, right? So we move into the next chapter, Darul Uloom Deoband now. The conditions of the Muslims in India began deteriorating day by day after the 1857 uprising. Thousands of people were in disarray. Many great ulama were mercilessly martyred. Thousands of women became widows with no one to take care of them. Children were roaming the streets with no parental guidance. Wealthy Muslims who at one time lived in palatial homes had to now fight for survival living in informal settlements. Bahadur Shah Zafar, the last Mughal emperor, was arrested and he was exiled to Rangoon. Now you see, you must understand why every time they want to kill the Muslims there. This Buddhist, why every time they want to kill the Muslims there? Burma, Rangoon, why every time? Because they are afraid of these uprisings. They must keep suppressing these Muslims, keep put them down. As soon as they start establishing madaris, as soon as they start teaching, they start establishing themselves, go and kill them. Go and break down the madaris. Go and butcher them. Any Muslim about whom the British had the slightest doubt was hanged immediately without any trial. Most of the wealthy Nawabs who were responsible for running huge madrasas in India were carefully selected by the British and hanged in public to put an end to all the good work that they were doing. Their factories, properties and wealth was all usurped. So now what happens now? The person who his jaan and his maal is not for Allah Ta'ala. But he was contributing to a madrasa to sideline. Why? I'm going to get some barkat in my rizq. Right? You know, some people contribute because they want barkat in their rozi. People contribute also ajib, ajib. Some people, they say now, I want to contribute to the madrasa, but it must be for this in the madrasa, this particular thing. Now, how are we going to do that? When you're building a masjid, some people, they say, no, I want to give for the musalla. They only want to give for the musalla. So if the ceiling is not there, how the musalla going to survive? If the walls are not there, how the musalla going to survive? So when you're collecting for the masjid, they don't give for anything. Only when you're collecting for musalla, they want to give for musalla. So one person told me, he said, no, Maulana, what must do now in future when we're building masjids? We must work out one musalla space, what it cost the whole building, everything. See, that's the price of the Muslim. And other people, on the other hand, they give with an open heart. They just give. Because their niyat is i'la'i kalimatillah. That's their niyat. That Allah gave us wealth, we must use our wealth. That's our khidmat of deen. We must use our wealth for the upliftment of the deen of Allah Ta'ala. So, now these wealthy nawabs who were taking care of all the madaris, so they were killed by the British. So the other wealthy people who were giving for barakat's sake, they stopped giving. Because they don't want to get killed. Now our factories will go, our shops will go, everything will go, they don't want to get killed. So they stopped contributing towards the madrasas. These wealthy people whose factories were, you know, usurped, etc., their children and grandchildren became eligible for handouts. They were made into a nation of beggars. Despite all this difficulty and hardship, the Muslim in India still kept his iman alive. He may have lost his wealth and his belongings to the British, but the wealth of iman remained in his bosom. He cherished his iman. He ensured that he protected and took full care of it. After killing as many Muslims as they could, they now focused their attack on the iman of the Muslims. Christian missionaries in large numbers began roaming the streets of India, misguiding the common Muslim. This became a cause of great concern for the ulama of India. The English then put a stop to the Farsi language, Persian language. Now, you see, sometimes we don't realize what's in the minds of the seniors. Because we don't know the history. We don't read the history. Right? Maulana Abdul Hamid Sahib, till today, they teach Farsi in the Darul Uloom. Right? Now, when we were young, to be in the Darul Uloom, now they're teaching Farsi. What are we doing this for? What are we doing this for? You know, when you're young, you think, what are we doing this for? Farsi in between, yeah? Urdu is there, now the sharas are in Urdu and everything now. Who got Farsi kitabs now? Yeah? And today's student, he's saying, what we have to learn Urdu for? The sharas are in English now. So why we have to learn Urdu? But you see, the elders, they know where it began. So they know that these people, their plan is to make you mahrum of your ilm. What's preserved in the Farsi language, what's preserved in the Urdu language, you're not going to get in the English. So now, if they cut out your Farsi, they cut out your Urdu, now, you are handicapped. Understand? So the elders, the seniors, they have a different vision. Because the vision of a Darul Uloom was not just to churn out an army. The vision of the Darul Uloom is a jihad. It's a jihad against the forces of batil that are trying to suppress this deen of Allah Ta'ala. You will realize this from why Darul Uloom Deoband was established. What brought it about? So the English put a stop to the Persian language, which had been the national language of India, and they replaced it with English. They then appointed an educationist by the name of Lord Macaulay. Now, this is the same shaitan. This Lord Macaulay, he is the same one who made that statement. They must open the schools. Spread your influence through the schools. So they brought this educationist by the name of Lord Macaulay to amend the whole educational system in India. Now they come like as if to say, we got your well-being at heart. They're killing you, hanging your ulama, everything, looted the whole place. Then they come in like saviors, no peace treaty, amnesty, all that. And now we have to educate your children. We're going to make your children successful. He introduced English subjects into the school curriculum, and he put an end to all subjects that had any link with Islam. I remember when in our country they wanted to start Islamic schools, and Azam Abdul Hamid Sahib at that time, he vehemently opposed it. People couldn't understand why. Today you see the natija. Today you see the natija. One principal of an Islamic school, he asked me this thing, why you keep, you know. So I said, because I taught in one for a while. So I'm talking from what I know, I'm not talking from outside. I stood in, one of my friends was going for Hajj, he needed somebody to stand in for him. So I stood in for him a couple of months. But I asked him this question. I said, see, tell me something. You got a child in grade 4, grade 5. He fails maths, he fails English. Can he progress to the next grade? Can't progress. Those are compulsory subjects, can't. Then how come you got a student in grade 6, grade 7, don't know how to read Quran Sharif still? How did he progress? So is Quran Sharif not a compulsory subject? So this was the vision of those ulama who opposed the Islamic schools. Yes, there may be some benefit. But the maqsad of the Islamic school was never to promote Islam. The maqsad of the Islamic school was, I didn't want my daughter to sit next to Jabu. That was the maqsad of the Islamic school. The real reason for opening the Islamic school is when the apartheid regime fell and now everything was going to be mixed. Now we were frightened. Now how are our children going to sit next to this one and that one? So that's why we established Islamic schools. That was a way out. That not only a Muslim can come to this school. Right? And we can control and we can this thing here. Because it's semi-private, some are totally, fully private. Right? But it was never to establish Islam. So the negative side to it is, you got a child going to an Islamic school and he is being taught Islamic subjects, right? And he feels now he doesn't have to go madrasa anymore. But he can't even read Quran Sharif many a time. His Islamiyat is very limited. That was the negative side to it. Right? That respect for Quran Sharif became like another textbook. Whereas, prior to that he was going to school. He had to wear his grey pants, his white shirt, his blazer and all that. But now in the afternoon when he's doing madrasa, he's topi, kurta, he's doing a monana now. So it was, the person understood what his deen was and what the secular was. Now he's got kachumbar now. I went into one class. The teacher had given the students an assignment to do. What was the assignment? They needed to make a poster, like advertising, like a travel agent, you know. So these fellows had the whole class full of posters now. Somebody is advertising for Bahamas, somebody is advertising for Mauritius. So, and there are pictures, inappropriate pictures, right? Sutter is exposed and things like that. Now I had to teach Quran Sharif. So I went in this class and I told them, but what's all this? They said, no, our assignment, the teacher said, must put. I said, take all this thing out. How are we going to teach Quran Sharif here with all this? Take all this thing out, put it out. So they took it out. Hey, after a couple of periods, said, man, Chitti, come to me. Come to the office. I go there to the office. The teacher is there. The principal, the teacher is fuming. An auntie, she is fuming. He demoralized the students. Made them tear down their assignments. So the principal is telling me, but Morana, I told him, excuse me, but I can't use Quran Sharif. Is that thing allowed in Islam? To put all the thing, is it allowed in Islam? So that's why I say that most of these schools, they're not there to promote Islam. It's just to create a haven for our children. Our softies, create a haven for them. It's a less volatile environment than going out to the government school. Okay? But it's not to promote Deen-e-Islam. Illa mashallah, there may be one, two here and there. But most are not to promote Deen-e-Islam. I can give you so many examples. The one time they decide they want to go for excursion. So where they're going for excursion to Ushaka. And all the children would be allowed to swim also in the pools there. So they is still in the Mashwara phase. So in the Mashwara, I asked them that, so what's going to happen about the Parda here now? You've got big boys, you're talking about grade 10s. Big boys, big girls. So how are we going to do this thing? Say, no, Mauna, we're not that foolish. The boys will go first, or the girls will go first, and they'll come out. We'll do something else with the others. Then we'll take, so if you put the boys in the pool first, we'll take the girls, do something else with them, and then we'll take the boys out and put the girls. I said, all right, fine. You sorted that part out. And what you're going to do to all the people walking past? You're going to blindfold them. All the other people, tourists and holiday makers, what you going to do with them now? You're going to blindfold all of them also. So eventually it got thrown out. And I too got thrown out. And I was only supposed to be there for a short while. So I too came out. But the very next year, they went to that same place. They went again to that same place. Because there was nobody to oppose it. So the point is that it's not there to establish the deen of Allah Ta'ala. It's called Islamic and Muslim and whatever. But the real maqsad is not to establish the deen of Allah Ta'ala. So this Macaulay came, he introduced subjects. Anything that had any link with Islam, he removed it. Their motive was to create such a mindset in the Indian that a native would outwardly look like an Indian. Kaan khol ke suno. Listen. This is the plot of Shaitan. These people, Macaulays and Pacaulays and all, they are just agents of the devil. This is the plot of the devil. They will look like Indian, but in his heart, soul and mind, he is British. He's British. See, one friend was telling me, he said, Mona, I like to dress up. I wear my kurta, I like to dress up. So what you mean, like dress up? So, no, when I'm riding bike, he likes to ride bike. So, when I'm riding bike, so I want to wear that. You know, the outfit that the bikers wear and how the bikers dress now. I like to dress up like that. So, why you want to dress like that? Who rides more bike? Americans, English, or Pakistanis? Who rides bike more? Pakistanis, right? But they're not wearing that gear. They're wearing normal kurta and they're riding. So you can ride with your kurta, but you see that mindset. That now I'm doing that. I must dress up. I have to dress up like that. It's an attraction to a Western lifestyle, a Western tariqa, a kuffar culture. And that's what they want. Indoctrination from all sides. So he says that the native would look like an Indian, but in his heart, soul and mind is British. They were going to achieve this in the name of education. Lord Macaulay had announced in a speech that among the specialities of this new education will be that whoever goes through our system of education will be Indian by face and skin, but heart, soul and mind will be British. We'll continue with this inshallah. It's a very important thing for our people to understand. Sometimes, you know, you hear some ulama speaking, like, especially as Imam Hamid Sahib recently, you know, he's not saying it, but no, he's old. He's now in the end of his life. Allah still give him long life. He's no more saying it, you know, sugarcoating anything. So whether you like it or not, I'm going to stuff this down your throat. Because they can see what is happening. They know the history. They know where it's coming from. They see what is happening. And they see time is running out. And how are we going to answer by Allah Pak if we never caution the ummah? We have to caution the ummah. So sometimes, like when we talk about school, and you know, we who are sitting there, we think, what's wrong with Moana? Children are going to school, man. What's the problem? When you realize, when you read your history and you realize what was the maqsad, then you'll appreciate what he's saying. Hazrat Mohammad Patel Sahib Rahmatullah Ali also, he was very, very concerned about the schooling system. Very concerned about the schooling system. Some people confuse the issues. Hazrat used to give talk when they used to have AMSA. He'll give a talk. I mean, everybody needs advice. He'll give advice. Sometimes he's called to the university. He used to go to university also and give them advice. One is to have the well-being of each person at heart. That is a different thing. But he was worried about the schooling system. That's why he made that Taqwa boys school and girls school. And he told them, mustn't register it to. You don't have to be registered. How much do children need? They just need that much education. Then they must study deen after that or go in their father's businesses. My own children, he told me, don't send them to school. And so many people who had taluk with him, he warned them, you don't send your children to school. Teach them at home. How much do they need to learn? Teach them at home and carry on. Allah Ta'ala give us tawfiq. Subhanallah wa bihamdihi. Subhanakallahumma wa bihamdik. Nashhadu an la ilaha illa anta nastaghfiruka wa natubu ilayh. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته.